Oh boy, what a night we've got for you. A couple guests for the first half. James Carman joins us. James will be with us for the whole show. Later on, Lynn Buchanan joins us as well. James, of course, has put together and produced the film The Hidden Hand, Alien Contact and the Government Cover-Up. And let's get right into it when we come back on Coast to Coast AM. James Carman works as a producer in New York City. He has investigated the paranormal all his life. His work has been showcased at many film festivals all over the world. And, of course, we're talking about The Hidden Hand, Alien Contact and the Government Cover-Up. And currently he's working on a new film called Superconscious. Boy, James, you hit everything we love. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Good. And welcome back again.
Thanks.
The Hidden Hand, how's it been received?
It's been doing pretty well. In the fall, it was for 3 weeks, it was on Google's top 10 selling list for documentaries.
Good for you.
Which was great. And it was at a film festival in Jakarta. It was a international film festival for spirituality, religion, and visionary. And there it won a Filmmaker of Peace Award, which I think is kind of interesting for a UFO film. You wouldn't necessarily expect that, but for me, it's something. It just shows that there's like more openness worldwide in terms of embracing this subject matter, that it's not just kind of like an American craze anymore.
What got you to key in on this topic, James?
Well, first off, you know, just thinking about what's affecting the world, because, if the world doesn't make sense, then you have to start thinking about it. But when I started, when I came back here to the United States, I was producing a series of healing videos, and I saw women during the breaks who would kind of huddle together, and they would talk about having children that were aborted, and they would say that they were hybrids, and they were crying and they were distraught. And, you know, these healings series went over weeks and months. And so I got to know them pretty well. What could be more visceral than someone actually attacking your genetics or taking you and using you kind of as a hybridization
sure.
vehicle.
So when you got into it, give us the premise of the film, The Hidden Hand. How did you structure it?
Well, you know, first off, it was like, okay, there's a phenomenon here, and it's real. And then I took, Dr. Edgar Mitchell, who's very well-respected,
yep.
Paul Hellyer, Lynn
former,
Buchanan.
Yeah, Paul Hellyer, former Canadian defense minister.
Yes, and just I interviewed a lot of people who I considered very credible and very respectable, and just saying, look at they are here. We've had these experiences. We've had this knowledge, and you should take it seriously. And then I kind of led into the whole abduction process, the whole contactee experiencer process. And then from there, I went into the involvement with the military and black projects and how that works. And then I went into basically there's different kinds of races. And
mm-hmm.
people have these different experiences, and then into implants, and that's real, and that's something that's very tangible that we're removing out of people that have very anomalous properties.
So you touch all these top topics that are surrounding
yeah.
the UFO field. I mean,
yes.
you jump right into it. Have you concluded anything, James, in terms of what it was like for you years gone back when you started this, and then now? Do you have you seen something where you can make a definitive conclusion?
Well, you know, the film is called The Hidden Hand, and it's talked about how ET is manipulating events in human history from behind the scenes, and I think you do get a sense that that's happening. But on the other hand, it's like there's two hidden hands. You have also the hidden hand of the secret government that's also manipulating abductees, re-abducting abductees, doing all this reverse engineering and all this disinformation programs about ET to muddy the waters. And so I feel like there's two hidden hands. And, you know, when you have two hands, usually they're connected to one body.
Yeah.
And so I have the feeling that it's all related somehow. And I mean, my personal feeling is that I think it is directed ultimately from ET. If you look at our ancient history, in the creation myths and the tablets of Sumeria, it says that we were created, and we were created for specific purposes. And then at some point, that whole dynamic changed to where the gods weren't present on the earth anymore, at least not like in everyday life. But I still think they have a hand in the human experiment and what's going on.
Well, you know, those Sumerian theories that Zechariah Sitchin brought forth, truly amazing. And, you know, there are some people, of course, who don't accept that. But I think it's one of the greatest theories I've heard, and it makes a lot of sense, especially when you look at Genesis. It just kind of echoes that. If you interpret what Sitchin did and the book of Genesis, I mean, it seems like we're talking about the same thing.
Right.
Paul Hellyer made news just a few weeks ago. He's been on the program with me several times, but he came out again to talk about extraterrestrials and things. And I mean, and this is a guy who was, you know, a former minister in Canada. I mean, this is not just someone who's got an agenda or anything like that. This is an incredible story, James, isn't it?
Well, he's not only a former defense minister. He was the lead of a political party for many, many years. Mm-hmm. And he was also a deputy prime minister under Pierre Trudeau.
Trudeau, yeah.
And I mean, that's like the vice president. I mean, that's a very high-ranking position. And I know him fairly well, and I visit him when I'm in Toronto, and he's an incredible person and very, very bright. And I think he has really the highest values and virtues. And when he says something, I would listen to it.
He's got lots of energy, doesn't he?
Yeah, he's really quite old, yeah. But he's great. He's in very good condition.
We should be that lucky. And Edgar Mitchell's the same way. I mean, he's in his 80s, I think.
Yeah.
And he's got a lot of energy. He just keeps going.
Yeah, he's a very sharp guy. And, you know, he has so much to back him up. He was a Navy captain, which is the highest ranking you can be in the Navy. He was a decorated war hero. He was a test pilot. He has two PhDs from MIT. And then he founded FIONS, which is kind of like bridging the gap, especially then in the 70s when he started, about consciousness and science and parapsychology. And it's a pretty amazing organization.
Yeah, it sure is. Now, of course, the highest in the Navy you can go, you can become an admiral. Which would be
okay. Well, yeah, an admiral. Right. I guess you're right.
In my 9 years of Navy training, I got to know something from that.
Right. Okay.
But when you talk about the government cover up, and a lot of people believe there is a government cover up, why? What are they hiding, and why?
Well, I think, you know, what you have to think of it in terms of, I wouldn't call it the government cover up. I would call it the secret government cover up.
Aha.
And I think that they're really two distinct things. I mean, obviously, the secret government feeds into the government, but the government doesn't have access to the secret government and doesn't know what's going on. And like the military, it's extremely compartmentalized. And, you know, I think one of the main things is if you keep everything secret, you have a tactical advantage. And then you have to start thinking, well, who do they want to have a tactical advantage over? Is it the Russians or is it the human population itself? And I'm starting to think more the latter because, you know, we're given no inroads at all into this whole topic. And I don't think the White House is either. So I think, you know, they have a lot to gain in terms of control over this planet and control over humans living here, and also having the technology, one, to repel any outsiders and to go wherever they want in terms of the galaxy. I think nowadays we have spaceships that are quite advanced.
Is there a military application here? And that could be one of the major reasons to keep this secret?
I think obviously there's a military application. I mean, there's a lot of different ET races visiting us. There is a technology exchange program. You know, if you have something like SERPO, supposedly there's been a human ET soldier exchange program. And so, you know, that's why you would have the whole Star Wars system built up, that that, you know, we as a planet would have some kind of sovereignty and not just anyone could come visit us and do whatever they want, unless their technology was so much more advanced than ours that, you know, it would be like, you know, someone putting up Roblox and you've got a MiG flying over them.
Are you convinced beyond a shadow of a doubt that this planet has been, is being visited by extraterrestrials from another and other planetary systems?
Well, I wouldn't necessarily say planetary systems. I might say planetary systems and or dimensions.
Uh-huh.
It seems to me like it's not clear cut. And in, I'm not saying it's not possible, but as far as we know, it's not that feasible unless they're using wormhole technology, or maybe they're in a totally different dimension. But obviously there's a lot of things that we don't understand, but our physics is very rapidly catching up with the idea that there are many different dimensions, and the you know, we're perceiving three or four right now, but there would necessarily have to be at least 11 right where we're sitting. So I think, there's definitely interaction.
Is it all good interaction, James, or is there some evil behind it?
Well, I think it's hard to say good or evil. You know, it's like, if for cows, are we good to them or are we evil? In one way, you know, we help propagate their species, but in the other hand, we slaughter them at will. And a lot of times we, you know, you would sexually abuse them with artificial insemination. We, you know, kill them, we keep them penned up, we do all kinds of things because we consider them our resource. So I don't know if you can necessarily say good and evil. It's kind of like a predator does what a predator does because that's its nature. So I think if you start thinking of things that way, then, you know, it helps rather than to say good and evil. But I personally think that there is everything. I mean, from the very, very highest, most spiritual to what I would call more of a demonic kind of nature, demonic beings who, you know, in earlier times, people would describe demons and
you think they,
and the jinns. And, yeah, you know, I think that vernacular has changed and it's the same phenomena is still happening, but people are now calling it like, oh, these are the tall blondes, or these are the reptilians, these are the grays. And plus, I think you still do have other demons and visitors, but with every age, the vernacular changes about what this phenomenon is.
What was for you when you were putting together The Hidden Hand the most fascinating aspect?
For me, I have to say that I found the MyLab abductions quite interesting, because it was like, you know, if you take an abductee who's being basically, since their childhood, they've been having contact and they've been being abducted, and they're also schooled in a program,
mm-hmm,
and they're all being taught, they're being trained to interact with technology, they're being trained psychically. And it's a real program that lasts all their life. But then you also have the MyLabs, which is when the secret government is interested in specific abductees, and that they start also abducting them on a regular basis and debriefing them, drugging them, finding out what they know, finding out what's going on, and kind of using them as a double agent in terms of finding out what ET is up to. Then it's, these people have a double whammy going on with them, and it's like, if you know, it's hard to have a double life, but they have a triple life. And what's worse is that both aspects of it is fairly traumatic, and they're drugged, and all their memories are wiped. So they're kind of walking around in a daze, and you can see the trauma in them, but they don't have access to what it's all about. So life for them is a kind of a very confusing adventure.
That is truly remarkable. And did you have any difficulty getting to people for the film?
Yes. I mean, especially in terms of that aspect, the MyLabs, there's many people who said that they would give me an interview, and then they didn't at the last moment.
Somebody get to them?
I don't know exactly what happened, but, you know, there were some people, like, I would you know, even two or three times at that interview, and they would cancel every moment at the last time. And that was definitely where the most fear was based, not necessarily just the abductees or ET, but kind of like when that whole military would be mixed up in it, then there was a lot more fear. It was a lot more palpable, I thought.
Tell me a little bit about Lynn Buchanan, who will be joining us in the next half hour, if you would, James.
Lynn is kind of, he is an amazing man. He's brilliant. He speaks seven languages. He's a linguist. He's also a computer expert. He's also a very gifted psychic. He has PK abilities, and he's a gifted remote viewer. He's teaches remote viewing, and plus he's had all this ET experience all his life, where, you know, since he was 4 years old, and then on through his whole military career, he would have interaction with ET on a, I wouldn't say a regular basis, but on an ongoing basis. And I find him to be extremely eloquent and honest, and a genuinely caring person.
We had him on the program about 10 years ago.
Right.
And he I think, if I recall, he wrote some kind of report on extraterrestrials when he left the military service, didn't he?
He did. And it wasn't like, okay, what's going on with extraterrestrials? It was specific, and it was like, what is the relationship between humans and ET in terms of psychic abilities? And it was focused on just on that. And he's, you know, a trained psychic, and he is a natural psychic. So I think he gave it a lot of thought, and he was given access to a lot of classified papers that usually no one would get to see. And so he put together a convincing report.
Sure. Well, I'm looking forward to talking with him, and you'll stay with us, James, as well, for that interview and also some phone calls next hour as well. This hybridization program fascinates me because, yeah, you know, on one hand, one would think, well, maybe they're seeding worlds with these little children, with these beings that they end up keeping and raising, or maybe they're developing some kind of population to come back and get rid of us and put them in place. Mm-hmm. What do you think of those two different theories?
Well, why wouldn't both of them be true?
Well, they could be.
Right. And, you know, in terms of humanity, it's very visceral, because we're used to thinking of ourselves as top dog and being able to kind of direct what goes on in this planet. And when that gets taken away from us, it's almost hurtful. It's like, oh my God. And then it's very frightening too, because then you automatically feel like you're in danger, because there are beings that can have access to you and basically do what they want with you. So I've heard reports that there are hybrids here on this planet. I haven't actually seen any. I've talked to friends of mine, like the Ingo Swan, before he died, he wasn't talking about hybrids, but he would talk about ETs that he would see here, and he went out of his way not to interact with them. He was very, very cautious and did not want to have any kind of interaction with them. So I don't know if they're meant to take us over or not, but that's something we'll have to see. And it would also be kind of fair game in terms of evolution. I mean, it would be what you could consider it as an upgrade of the human species, in a way of, we would have a lot more mental capabilities and psychic capabilities, and we would still have our emotional capabilities. So, you know, there might be even upsides to that, but it's not something I would embrace.
All right, James, stay with us. We're going to bring Lynn Buchanan in next as we continue talking about ETs, right here on Coast to Coast AM. If you need to email me, george@coasttocoastam.com, and also like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter. We shall be right back. Okay, welcome back to Coast to Coast. Let me tell you a little bit about Lynn Buchanan, who was with us, by the way, 10 years ago on the program, Executive Director of Problems Solutions Innovations. That's a company involved in instructing the application of controlled remote viewing. Lynn has worked in the Army Intelligence, specializing in linguistics and computing, speaking seven languages, was a member of the Fort Meade's elite remote viewing unit, had contact with ETs, wrote a definitive report on ETs when he left the military, and he was part of The Hidden Hand, James Carman's film. And James is still with us, of course, too. Lynn, welcome back. Long time.
Yes, it has been. Thank you for inviting me back.
You're still heavily involved in remote viewing, aren't you?
Yes. It's a thing that just takes over your life, or it has mine. And if I ever quit being amazed at it, I'll quit. But I haven't stopped being amazed yet.
Lynn, tell us a little bit about what you experienced, this contact that you had, and then you left the military. Tell us what happened.
Oh, which contact is that?
When you were doing your remote viewing, of course, right?
Oh,
and
yeah.
You had a major ET contact. How did that happen? What happened?
Well, actually, the ET contact had happened about 25 years before that.
Really? Okay.
And I had forgotten it. But my wife said something one day that just brought the whole flood of everything back, memories, and it brought it back. And I thought, you know, that's crazy. I haven't been abducted. That's stupid. And so anyway, I thought it was a false memory of some kind, and I had the remote viewing unit there. So I encrypted some coordinates, and when I went back to work the next week, I just gave them the coordinates and I said, here's a mystery target for you. You know, I'm not going to tell you what it is or anything. And they all found the abduction that I had remembered.
Huh.
Sometime after that, I was stopped up at the Defense Intelligence Agency by whatever one calls the Men in Black, and questioned on it. And I thought that they were going to try to find out if, you know, somebody with my security clearance had gone bonkers. But what they wanted to know was how to work the control panel, because in that abduction, I had an opportunity to actually work it for a few minutes. And when I finally realized what they wanted, it dawned on me, they have one of these things and they don't know how to fly it. And and so when I brought that up, the interrogator half of the Men in Black just got extremely angry, and they were up and gone. But I found out about a year later that this was pretty accurate. Yeah.
Well, the fact that you knew what they knew probably really ticked them off, huh?
Yeah, I knew how they operate. I had been out once with the Men in Black as a Man in Black before, and so I knew how they operated, and one of them screwed up. he did something he wasn't supposed to do, and that just tipped me off to the whole thing. So, yeah.
You were once a Methodist minister, right?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And did you have some kind of ET experience at that point?
That was the thing that had happened 25 years before.
Ah, all right.
And yes, that was the abduction that I had.
What happened?
Well, I'll try to make this quick. The Methodist Church moves their ministers from parsonage to parsonage, you know, and church to church. And I was packing up to leave. My family had already moved to the other parsonage, and I was packing up everything. It was late at night, and I laid down on the floor, had everything out into the U-Haul. I laid down on a pallet on the floor, and I heard something land in the backyard. Now, we lived like a mile from the nearest road. I mean, this is extremely small country church. And so I was going to get up and try to find out what had landed in the backyard, and I couldn't move. And I heard some people coming around the house, and the next thing I knew, I was sitting in a row of seats. To my right, there were about three empty seats, and to my left, there was this scared little old lady. And it finally dawned on me, I think I've been abducted by aliens or something here. And one of them came walking by, and I said, "Excuse me, may I move over by the window? I wanted to see where it was." And when I said that, I mean, he looked at me like, you know, there's a shark loose in the swimming pool or something. And he turned around and ran. And he and two other like him came back with a little gray, who I found out later was the pilot. And so anyway, they tried to put me back under. And I was just too curious about what was going on. I didn't go under, so they took me up front so they could watch me. And I knelt down beside the pilot and watched him
maneuver
the control panel and fly it. And anyway, the next morning, I found myself wandering around the house, and it finally dawned on me, oh, yeah, I'm moving today. So I threw the pallet into the U-Haul and took off, but I forgot to check the backyard. Well, for the next 25 years, actually, I couldn't leave the house without feeling like I'd forgotten something.
Really?
And, I mean, it got chronic at times. And one Sunday, my wife and I were going to church, and I had gone back like 15 times to check the house, and she started making fun of me, and she said, did you check the basement? Did you check the gas? Did you check the lights? Did you check the backyard? And the minute she said, did you check the backyard, it all came flooding back.
Did you freak out?
I'm sorry?
Did you freak out?
Oh, yeah, totally. I was shaking. I sat down on the front steps, and I couldn't believe what had happened.
Lynn, let's go back to the craft for a moment. Did you ever find out what the propulsion system was?
No, and I sure would like to. I would like to build one myself.
Oh, my gosh.
I have always hoped that I could abduct an alien and get their spaceship, but I don't think that's going to happen.
Can you describe what the inside of the craft looked like when you
were in the part that we were in was two rows of seats, and the back row was filled up, and like I say, there were three empty seats on my right and a little old lady to my left, and then me in the seat beside her. When they took me up front, it was a different room. There was equipment on both sides, and these three pale, very pale white guys that were like 6.5 feet tall and I mean, muscled up like Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Mm-hmm. Human-looking?
Human-looking, but dumb. I mean, if you'd said hello to them, they'd been stuck for an answer. And, I mean, they just, you know.
Were they like zombies?
Like you, and they did everything this little gray told them to.
How strange.
But the gray was very intelligent. He was very friendly, actually. And the front window in front of us was fairly large. He explained to me when we landed on wherever it was we landed that they were a small unit that had three ships, and that was it. And they were a medical unit. And anyway, when they filed us off of the ship, it was on this path. And the path led up a hill to a little pavilion-type thing. And the pilot came up, grabbed me by the arm, and he said, you don't want to go up there. And so he and I sat down on the side of the hill and we started talking. And from the sounds of coming, you know, coming from the pavilion, he was right. I really didn't want to go up there. It was something kind of give you nightmares. But anyway, I got to talk to him and I got to ask him a lot of questions. And I said, you know, what are they doing? And he said, well, they're putting stuff into their bodies. And I said, oh, well, what are these implants? You know, what are you doing? What do you do with them? And he said, well, we're a medical unit. And he said, our people go through space. They catch all kinds of diseases. And I'm using my terminology here. He said, you humans are just antibody factories. And he said, when we get diseased tissue, we implant some of that tissue into you. You create antibodies, and we come back and harvest the antibodies and treat our people.
So maybe we are unique and special, Lynn, huh?
Well, yeah, I think so. Well, he said some other stuff. Well, and I found out some other stuff, too, much, much later on that I don't think he realized how special we are. Yeah.
Do they ever, or do you ever talk with them about God or a higher power?
No, I don't talk to them. That was I had one incident when I was like 4 or 5 years old, and then that one incident of the abduction. And you know, I live here in Alamogordo. I live in Alien Alley.
Oh, you sure do. Everything happened there. Jeez.
Oh, yeah. You can look up, and every now and then you'll see something go over. You don't know if it's one of ours or one of theirs, but you know it's not normal. And other than that, I've had no contact. Now, I did remember that they said that anytime I change my mind, I'm getting ahead of myself here. He let me work the controls for a while.
What's it like? What was it like controlling?
It was very primitive, extremely primitive.
Really?
Yeah, it worked on air pressure. There were no dials, no gauges. It was all mechanical. And since then, I have made friends with the guy who's in charge of technology transfer, and he told me, yeah, their equipment is extremely primitive.
That's weird.
But they've been trading with us. And they said that they could use me as a pilot, and I said, well, I'll go get my family. And they said, no, you can't have your family. And so I said, no. But anyway, my friend that's in charge of the technology transfer was chuckling last time I saw him. And he said, guess what? We're trading them now. He said, that stuff that we traded from them, we've improved on it. And now then we're trading their own stuff back to them. Yeah.
We must be pretty sharp as a species, huh?
I was asked to write a paper after I retired from the military.
By whom? Who wanted you to write it?
By a government agency.
Okay. What did they want you to write it on?
The subject was the an assessment of psychic abilities of ETs, and they let me have access to some records that I don't think anybody else will, you know, they never made it into the Blue Book, and I don't think anybody else will ever see these records, but I was able to take all of the confirmed abduction reports and so on, And I was able to cut it into four categories. There's not us and them. There's us and them and them and them and them and them and them. And all of the thems can actually, when you consider psychic phenomena, can be cut into four categories. And you've got friendly and unfriendly. And in each of those two categories, you've got psychic and not psychic. Mm-hmm. Now, the not psychic, unfriendly ones, they don't tend to come here, except, you know, by accident or whatever.
Those that come here, though, the unfriendly ones, what is their agenda?
Well, let me get to that in just a second. The friendly ones who do come here who are not psychic come here for trade.
Trade?
The friendly psychic ones come here, and they tend to be the ones who say, you know, peace on your planet, you know, take care of your planet, and they want to see us develop our powers. The unfriendly psychic ones, they want us dead. No questions asked. They just want us wiped off the face of the planet, period. And I couldn't figure out why, when I was doing this paper, I couldn't figure out why the altruistic attitude of the friendly ones and the hatred attitude of the unfriendly ones. And I came across this one incident that just sort of triggered the light, turned the light on for me, you know. These guys were camping near a lake. And off in the distance, they saw this UFO coming toward them.
Mm-hmm.
The UFO came up, came right over them, and that's when they tried to run, but they were frozen, and they got abducted. And all of a sudden, it just dawned on me, the ETs, who are psychic, have much stronger psychic ability than we have.
Oh, I would guess that.
But they have no range. They have to be right over you. And, I mean, their range is extremely small.
To be psychic, to pick up psychic things, you mean they have to be very close to you?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Huh.
And we have very weak psychic abilities, but we can see across the universe as well as we can see across the room.
Yeah, we have no bounds.
That's right. And so it dawned on me that the friendly psychic ones realize that if we can develop this ability, we will be a tremendous power in the universe. And that's why the other ones want us dead.
Well, David Jacobs says that there's something very nefarious about what they're doing. And so that may
be. Some of them, yeah. There are them and them and them. And there are friendly thems and unfriendly thems.
All right, Lynn, we'll stay with us. We're going to come back final hour with you and James Carman. We'll open up the phone lines. I do want to talk with you a little bit more about your ET encounters, though. Fascinating story. James Carman, of course, produced the film The Hidden Hand. I'll have him tell us where you can watch it. It's well worth it. We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.